Welcome to RCGP Scotland Presents, Generally Speaking. In this, the 12th episode of the podcast, RCGP Scotland Chair Dr. Chris Provan is joined by Dr. Katie Hawkins, RCGP Scotland's Clinician Representative for Climate and Sustainability, to discuss the college's work in this area.
Today I have with me Dr. Katie Hawkins. A really important subject around climate and sustainability, and Katie is our climate and sustainability lead for RCGP Scotland. So, Katie, do you want to just introduce yourself and tell me a bit about where you work and how you got into this issue around climate change?
Yes, well, thank you very much, Chris, for having me along today. I'm Katie, I'm a GP at the Access Practice in Edinburgh. So my patients are people who are experiencing homelessness, and I've worked in deep end practices for more than 10 years. I was very grateful to take on the role of Climate and Sustainability Clinician Representative for RCGP Scotland last summer. And I certainly see my role as helping GPs in Scotland to respond to the climate emergency, and that's by a number of different means. One is lobbying government and key decision makers to make the changes that we need. Another is supporting GPs and practices to improve their own sustainability and reduce emissions, and also support action that the college is taking. And I think a lot of my feelings about this come from the fact that the WHO, so the World Health Organization, declared that climate change is the greatest threat to human health this century. And I think when that sinks in, that can sound really quite scary. But there's another way. The Lancet recently produced a report which turned it on its head and actually said that addressing climate change may be the greatest global opportunity this century. And in some ways, I find that almost more useful because it's less scary. It actually, there's some essence of hope in this, and also it's a call to action. So climate crisis isn't just a climate crisis. It's also a crisis of biodiversity, air pollution, and this has huge implications for health globally and our patients living in Scotland. So I think with my role, particularly for patients in Scotland, I want to advocate to make the population of Scotland more resilient and adapt to the consequences of climate change. And this is definitely more effective if we look at this through a health equity lens. Also try and limit the impact that primary care has on climate change. And really importantly, bring GPs in Scotland together and create resources to make this action easy. So I really came into, you asked me how I came into working in climate and sustainability. And I suppose three things really happened to me. One is a realization of quite how important nature is for our health and well-being. And I remember, I love nature. I love going up mountains. And I remember at one point looking down from the top of a hill, and I didn't see anything that was beautiful. I really just saw bare hills, blank fields. I couldn't hear birds singing, and had this overwhelming feeling of what have we done? And a need to channel this into something positive. And I think I realized quite how important the incredible pockets of nature that are left in our country are for our health and well-being. I've also realized that fairness is one of my core values. It's probably why I've worked in a deep end practice for more than 10 years. But another realization point was also realizing that those who are least responsible for climate change are the people who are going to suffer first and worst. This feels deeply unfair. And initially, I think I thought this was going to be people in other countries. But then I actually realised it was my patients, people I was seeing day to day, who were already suffering. And I feel a deep responsibility to try and address that. And then I suppose I just realised that all these thoughts that I was thinking needed to and were getting support to become normal and part of core practice. And it is much better and much more effective if we do this as part of a team. And certainly, when I looked further, I realised the GMC has very clear guidance on this, and that our role as GPs is to protect and promote the health of patients and the public. And we also need to choose sustainable solutions when we're able, provided they don't compromise care.
Some GPs, including perhaps myself in the past, may have thought, well, what's that got to do with me? But it is actually really there in our day-to-day practice with our patients and what we can do about it. I like the way you're framing it around what we can do about it. Mm-hmm. And also you're hitting really the area around health inequity, which again is a big area that the college is active on and lobbying about. I work in a relatively deprived practice as well. So we see that on the ground there. So is there anything else you want to say about how climate change really affects the health of our patients?
Yes. So certainly, I think the way we've evolved as humans in the past, if you look back, we look for and respond to immediate threats that are in front of us. And I think, like many of us, we've seen all these charts and statistics about climate change and think it just seems so totally unimaginable or unbelievable. But now, as I said, it is here and it's happening now. And sometimes I find it easier to describe this as direct effects and indirect effects. So direct effects are the direct effects of something in climate on a person. So for example, excess heat, we've had all these big heat waves over the past few years, which can lead to dehydration, acute kidney injury. But particularly in Scotland, these higher temperatures lead to increase in the tick population and therefore more Lyme disease, which we're seeing amongst patients. And then the UK actually has some of the least efficient housing stock in Europe, which makes our patients more vulnerable to the impact of fuel poverty on health. Then, for example, extreme weather, so storms, floods, and then actually last year, 2025, there were three significant wildfires in Scotland. So on Arthur's Seat, in Arran, and Dumfries and Galloway, and these all have significant health implications. And then, of course, air pollution, which affects almost every organ in the body. And certainly I see, particularly for my patients, they don't have green spaces that they can go to. They usually have just busy junctions that they can hang out on. And I'm really aware when I see some of my patients outside hostels, I just wonder how much their pre-existing respiratory disease is exacerbated by the traffic fumes that they're exposed to. And then, of course, climate change. So when we talk about indirect effects, this can sometimes be harder to understand. It's people living in deprived areas, and including my patients, who already live in food deserts where the only affordable food or the only affordable accessible food is ultra-processed, high-carbon food. And it's very difficult for them to follow a healthy diet when this is what they're exposed to. And certainly all this adverse weather also impacts in people's lives, water, energy prices, and then, of course, mental health. So climate change, we see direct impacts of climate change on mental health, anxiety, depression, and worse. But also some of the other consequences. So people just also fleeing countries where they've already been impacted and actually potentially moving to the UK. So, I mean, we've talked about pollution, change in heat, floods, fires. They don't just cause direct illness. They also destabilize supply chains, economies, which can lead to total system breakdown. So really important that it's something we address.
Absolutely. And I think you can often get this idea that this is far away. It's on the news. But actually, it's here with us now, even around fires, climate change, the impact on our patients. Anything else about specifically your patients you want to say about the impact of these
issues? Yes, I mean, I suppose the main things I see, particularly in my patients, are the consequences of fuel poverty, particularly living in food deserts, just having a complete lack of accessible and easy to access green space on their doorstep. And then, of course, the issue I've mentioned around air pollution, and that leads to earlier onset of respiratory disease, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and can also affect their immune system at an earlier age and worsen their mental health. So I think in the same way that we talk about, for example, equity and inequality and trying to embed that into routine practice, it really should be the same with climate change. Yep. And I think often some of these issues are best looked at together.
So the clear question is here, and you've already tried to switch it into a more positive focus. What can we do in primary care to help?
So I think most people want to do something about the climate crisis and feel it's important. But as GPs, we are often feeling overworked. We feel as though we haven't got the time to make changes. And I've certainly felt like this. And general practice is a stressful job. But what I've come to learn is the most impactful changes we can make can usually be incorporated into things that we're doing already. And so, for example, we know that the NHS is actually 5% of the UK's climate footprint. But 25% of the carbon footprint of the NHS is prescribing. So a polypharmacy review, for example, which we're all doing, does hopefully lead to less prescriptions, less waste, less hospital admissions. So it's better for patients, cheaper, better for the planet, and the long run saves time. And that's supported already by the frailty and CBD DESes as well, which help us to make some of those changes, which sometimes people might not initially see as related to climate and sustainability. And I think it's even more important to think about a prescription before you prescribe it. It's even more important to think about prescriptions before you prescribe them. For example, we know that at least 10% of the medicines we prescribe probably didn't need to be prescribed at all. So often the shared decision-making tool, which is the Brown approach, where we think of benefits, risks, alternatives, or do nothing, can be really helpful just to frame our decisions around prescribing. But even more important than that is actually having routine conversations with patients about, for example, a healthy diet, nature prescriptions, exercise on prescriptions. All of these have co-benefits on climate and health and might mean we don't even need to have a conversation about the prescription at all. And then, of course, the big thing in prescribing is inhalers. There's clearly, you'll be aware of the drive to prescribe dry powder inhalers instead of the multi-dose inhalers. And this is absolutely great if it works for the patient. But the thing I came to realize is we know that the carbon footprint of poorly controlled asthma is actually 3 times that of well-controlled asthma. So around these decisions around, so when discussing inhalers, it's really important to focus on what works for the patient, alongside making sure they've got good information on avoiding for whatever allergens, smoking, and the pollutants that they might be exposed to. So all these are things which can be incorporated into our day-to-day practice. Certainly we found as a practice that using the Green Impact for Health toolkit has been really helpful. This is a toolkit that was set up through the RCGP by Terry Kempel, but it's now being transferred over to Greener Practice. And it offers a very step-by-step list of ideas that a practice can take forward. And certainly my practice has recently achieved the Silver Award. We've got a long way to go, but there are some simple steps that you can do to make small changes, which actually are very achievable. For example, it might be just adding climate and sustainability to the weekly meeting agenda, thinking about other correct procedures being followed about waste, changing energy provider, turning down the heating, or even encouraging plant-based diets or active travel among staff. And I think often people can feel quite overwhelmed with what action they might take. But starting small and approaching your practice from where you're at is really important. And also just using the assets that you've got. So linking with the community and what do you already have that can help. The other thing, if you want to take things further, and certainly I found really helpful, was joining my local Greener Practice group. The Greener Practice website it's a fantastic website, which has recently been revamped this year, which connects people all over the UK and also has a huge wealth of useful and accessible guidance and resources and quality improvement tools, which can be incorporated into day-to-day practice. And then our own RCGP has the Net Zero Hub, which has lots of training modules around climate, which are really helpful. And then the Centre for Sustainable Healthcare course, which is I'm completing at the moment, and also on the UK. So the RCGP is a member of the UK Health Alliance on Climate Change, and they also have lots of resources around and education around how to make changes in your practice and also education tools. So I remember that feeling of thinking, right, I want to do something, but I really don't know how. And it was actually from an email from Terry Kempel because I said, I'm not getting anywhere in my practice. What do I do? And so I actually emailed him and he advised me to do a doodle poll amongst my practice. So I did that. And most of the people in my practice said, this is amongst the staff in the practice, said they felt climate change was important to address, but they didn't know how. And I suspect that that's similar in other practices. And I certainly felt it was a really important tool because I knew where my colleagues sat. And I also took the conversation changed from what can we do? And it brought everybody together, which was really helpful.
Yeah, I've certainly seen that as well in practices where you have the conversation about it and start that going. You listed a huge amount of information there, which is great. It can be probably a bit overwhelming, but once you just break it down into step by step, I think that's a powerful approach really around using the toolkits which allow you to do that.
Yeah, and I think that's, it can be overwhelming, but just sometimes even looking at what you do every day through a sustainability lens can be helpful. And certainly Greener Practice actually produced an infographic which was called No Time to Spare, which has a list of QR codes that people can actually link to, and they're really easy things that can be done, you know, within just a few minutes. So everyone understands that we are overworked and don't have time.
Absolutely, yeah. So it sounds like you've been doing a lot of work within your own practice. Is there anything else you want to tell me about what you're doing there?
I think I've described what I'm doing in my own practice. I think what might be helpful to understand that actually, although we've talked about actions that we can take in our own practice, it's really important that there are other levels that action happens as well.
Yep.
And I see these different levels, particularly as many of us are part of our clusters. And there's also the health board, and there's also policy and government level. And all of these need to come together to make things easier for us working at the coalface. So I certainly feel, as part of my role, I've already said it's to lobby the government and key decision makers in order to make some of these changes happen more easily. And some of these do need to be top down. And certainly last year, the Scottish government released the Population Health Framework, and that has a real focus on prevention, which, as we've mentioned, if you really focus on prevention, then you need less conversations about prescriptions in the first place, which has a real benefit on climate. And then some of my colleagues in both Greener Practice and RCGP came together to produce a paper which they took to the Chief Medical Officer last year, looking at six key areas and developed six actions for each area that could be taken forward around climate sustainability. And we've got some ongoing meetings happening now with public health to actually work out how those can be taken forward. And then, of course, Scottish elections, the RCGP manifesto has a section on climate sustainability.
Yep.
And we also have created a manifesto with the Royal Pharmaceutical Society, which we recently took to Parliament for a round table as to how to get some really concrete actions around sustainable prescribing. And certainly the Scottish Government are already listening, in that they've actually set up a work stream on sustainable prescribing. And amongst other things, as part of this, we really want to look at low carbon alternatives, but also make the carbon impact of prescribing much more visible. And then, of course, electronic prescribing. Which
yeah, that's a common thing, which is almost every meeting that we go to about IT and just in general, it's about electronic prescribing. Absolutely. And we've been pushing hard for that.
And I certainly think, certainly with electronic prescribing, it's not just the impact of the environmental impact of sending pieces of paper to pharmacies. It's also the impact on inequalities of, it is those who are most deprived who are having to chase around after their prescriptions, and it's much more complicated for them.
I mean, I think we often find that you're right, you need to actually have people voicing their opinions at different levels in the system. I mean, people can read the Chief Medical Officer's report, which is really very good around climate and many other issues which link into general practice. You can ask your local health board, what is their climate and sustainability plan, and what progress have they made around these types of things, perhaps those types of activities, and working in your clusters to highlight that. All of these things are really great, because we find it's great to have these different levels of lobbying.
Exactly. And certainly as GPs, we do work. We are advocates for our patients, and many of our patients don't have a voice, and we are trusted professionals. So we do have a role to take that forward.
Anything else really around some of the links into this is green social prescribing and things like that?
Yes. There's one other thing that I might be worth just mentioning. So certainly when we ask for change, certainly the Scottish Government ambition for net zero is really important. But I think it's really important not to just get totally stuck in thinking about carbon, but also think about air pollution, biodiversity loss, and the environmental impact of medicines on our waterways, because they're actually quite different.
Yeah, I've heard other people highlight that as well. So that's a good point.
So over the past 5 years, I've understood quite a lot more about green social prescribing. And I think this, for me, this initially happened during the period of lockdown. I was actually also doing an academic fellowship. And I realised that there was a movement of green social prescribing that was really taking off throughout the UK and lots of research and policy behind it. But when I thought about my patients, those living in one of the most deprived practices in Scotland, I was thinking, how on earth would they be able to access something like this? And I felt they were being left behind, both in sort of policy, funding and literature. And I wanted to really understand whether something like this could be done without widening the inequality gap. So I was very fortunate to have quite a few people come together at the same time. And our practice also moved site to a new location, and we had a blank playground out at the back of the practice, which we got a very sustainable source of funding to create it into a garden for the practice. And we now have a weekly gardening session for patients and also have food which they can have there as well. And people are either referred in or access it opportunistically. But also as part of our program, we realised that some people might not want to do an activity with other people. And we have developed a calendar with the RSPB so they can also do activities alone or with a friend or support worker if needs be. And that's been really important. But I was very aware that I was very lucky to get the funding and meet the right people at the right time for that to take off. And we had a great team at the practice that set it up. And I certainly felt that that was, that's been evaluated recently. And there's been a lot of very positive impact from our patients on by having a place where there isn't the stigma that they might find elsewhere. But at the same time, I've also been doing some work with the Usher Institute to develop a toolkit for use in primary care to enable people to access green social prescribing from socioeconomically deprived backgrounds. And that certainly has advice and also linked to some of the evidence around green social prescribing. But we also set up microsites for each practice so they could have links to activities that were going on in their area. I initially, when I thought about green social prescribing, to be honest, I didn't feel that confident in doing green social prescriptions and also felt as though I didn't really have the time to do it. I found linking in with other GPs has been really important. But also there was a GP survey done a few years ago around GPs in Scotland, which asked a specific question on green social prescribing. And 80% of GPs said they would be happy to issue a green social prescription. And I felt even just knowing that other GPs thought the same as me gave me permission to use it as part of my routine practice. And certainly the anecdotal feedback I've had from patients is it's made a huge difference.
Certainly I've seen in other places like Shetland very similar kind of activities, and they've got their community involved and gardens and those types of things. Yes, we live in a busy world, but sometimes engaging with your patients brings a lot of benefits. I've used the RSPB toolkit myself. There's evidence behind it. It gives you something really fun to do each month, which I follow up myself, and I would recommend that. Huge amount of information. Thank you. Any final thoughts or messages, really?
The other thing is, I think there's lots of people say that, social prescribing is quite difficult to evidence.
Yeah.
And I think that's been one of the things that is often pulled up on is, where's the evidence to show this works? We do have evidence that for green social prescribing, there is a social return on investment of somewhere between £2 and £8 per £1 spent. In reality, there are lots of challenges. For example, a lot of the prescriptions we're referring people to, there are things that are run by the third sector. They're on short-term funding. There are lots of challenges. And that's particularly bad for people who are experiencing socioeconomic deprivation.
A link worker?
We do have a link worker at our practice, and I don't know what we'd do without her. And I think it's really important, especially for deep end practices, when you're trying to link people in with social prescribing or green social prescriptions, a link worker is absolutely critical to making these work.
Yeah, we have as well, and we find he's very, very useful and knows all the resources and has the time really to help people.
But I think, like with many of the link workers, I'm sure you probably find the same, that they're actually overworked themselves and become sort of, they're at capacity very quickly.
Yep, I think that's right. Certainly, I think it's a really good way of non-medicalizing some things and helping people's health.
And I think one thing I've really learned is that a social prescription doesn't necessarily need to be done instead of another prescription. Often it's done alongside another prescription, but it might mean that actually that person needs that prescription for less time. And actually, again, with all of these things, often the impact that you see is actually in the long term. It's not an immediate impact. And that's why it's often so hard to measure.
Yeah, I think that's right. It's a slow burner in a way, but it does really help with people if they can and change, and we can point them in the right direction and support them.
I think it's just really important to say that most people aren't sure what to do about climate change. So if you feel like that, you're very much not alone. And I'll reiterate that it's the simple, easy things as part of core practice are key. And those things often save time and improve health in the long run, along with the effects on climate. But as I said at the start, climate change is both the greatest threat, but also potentially the greatest opportunity of the 21st century to turn things around. We do need to lobby for change through government and health boards and clusters at all different levels to make this easier for all of us working on the ground. But we also need to work more closely with our colleagues, for example, not just our colleagues in general practice, but our colleagues in public health, and also movements, for example, like the Deep End Group and also lifestyle medicine. And so we need this action now, but working together is key because a lot of us are trying to do the same thing. And I think often you hear the challenge from government is they say, there's just no money, we can't fund this. But I can't think of one action on climate change that doesn't also have a positive impact on health and time and resources, and then costs less in the long run and has a positive impact. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Really has a positive impact. And as you say, many people want to actually do something about it, but this is clearly chimed with what I've seen and helping people to start with that and reflect on that. Thank you very, very much, Katie. Your passion for this has come through entirely in what you've said, which is fantastic. We appreciate your thoughts and leadership in this area, and we will continue to support you to take this very important subject forward. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for listening to Generally Speaking, the RCGP Scotland podcast. Be sure to follow us on social media to stay up to date with all of the work and news from across the college.